And with the intention, with a wish to free all beings, I shall always go for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Enthused by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate the mind for full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. For as long as space remains, as long as there are beings to be found, may I likewise remain to drive away the sorrows of the world. Just take a moment to ground yourself in the body with the breath. Just breathing deeply into the now. And as you breathe, just notice the way the body feels as it breathes. The breath entering the nostrils and down into the lungs, and the lungs expanding, contracting with the out breath. The way the clothing moves on the body. Feeling the body and the mind settle. Just settling with the breath. As you breathe, notice if there's any place in the body that is restricting the breath, or restricting the flow of energy. And just breathe into that place. Sometimes wherever the stress is held, the body feels closed and tense, contracted. So breathe into that place that's contracted. And just not try to force it to do anything, but just to breathe in compassion for that constricted place. Allow the energy to be just as it is. If you have any kind of thought about that area, just allow the thought to be gentle. Just let it go. At this point, just accepting what is. This is this moment, and this is how it feels. accepting all thought, all emotion, all physical sensation, as simply having arisen. The morning chant of the Kagyu lineage says, whatever arises is fresh, the essence of realization. So this constricted place could be the essence of realization at this moment. So allow your heart and mind to open and just be curious about what it is. Holding yourself in tenderness. And now we have a new moment. Notice what's present in this new moment. Is it different? Has it changed? This is brand new. We've never had this experience before of this moment. So open yourself to just this moment. To the freshness of this moment. No matter what your mind says to you about it, this moment again is new. This moment is fresh. No matter what it seems to be. This moment we begin again. And just breathe in again to the body. Breathe in to the body deeply and breathe out. And see what you discover now. Again, we look to the newness, the freshness of each moment. We hear what the mind has to say about it. And we notice the thought and release it. Open our hearts to ourselves. What is the realization of this moment? Don't think about it. Just experience it. Just feel what the realization is at this moment. It could be as simple as, this position is uncomfortable. Let me shift a little. Or, oh my gosh, I am so at ease. Feeling great comfort in this moment, in this posture. Just continue to notice it, to be in this new moment. That last moment is already gone. So here we are launching forward into the newness of now. Just resting now for this last moment, this last minute, in this body, in this now. And acceptance of your own goodness, wakefulness, your own kindness. Thank you all. So we're going to talk about right speech. Is there too much traffic noise coming through you? Do you hear my traffic out there? Okay, good. William joined us. So thank you for being here, William. Welcome. So we're going to talk about right speech, which is in the Noble Eightfold Path, it is the first of the ethics training. This is called Sila in both Pali and Sanskrit. And this is the ethics training, three different teachings. It's a block of training on ethics. So it starts with right speech, and then right action and right livelihood. So, you know, the Buddha was very interested in people just living regular lives, right? We just live our regular lives. We're not monastics. And so he taught a lot of people who were not monastics. He traveled all over India and taught regular folk and people who were very educated and, you know, of all caste. Even untouchables were welcome and actually welcomed into his sangha. So this is about, you know, the ethics training is about the way we live our lives day to day. It's all about the way we live our lives day to day, right? But this is really like that nitty gritty stuff of here we are, the way that we work together, the way that we speak to each other, the way that we treat one another and ourselves, of course, and the way that we earn our living. And so I'll just read you a couple of things. Well, you know, one of the things that I always think about when I come to the ethics training is Carlos Castaneda's book, The Teachings of Don Juan. This is an old book, and some of you may remember it, but... So in it, he wrote that Don Juan talked about choosing a path with heart, which is the title of one of Jack Kornfield's books. And really, that's what the Buddha's path is a path with heart. But all of the dharmas that are out there, you know, that we can choose from, we can say, yes, this is a path with heart. A path with heart is that heart, that path that is filled with integrity, is filled with love, that leads us to goodness, that helps us to understand our place in the world and with others, and helps us to live well among others. And, you know, the thing that I like very much about the Buddhist path is that it is not a dogmatic path. For me... there's a lot of controversy right now in the Buddhist world, in the Buddhist community, about whether or not Buddhism is a religion. And I just don't consider it to be a religion. I consider it to be a way of life rather than a dogma. The instructions for me are wonderful in how I operate and function in my life with others. And with my own self, and the way that I hold myself accountable in my life. Really of all of these teachings, this one on right speech is the one that challenges me the most, over and over again. It is the most challenging for me. Whenever I teach it, I think, you know, I'm teaching this right now because it is exactly what I need to hear. I need to hear about right speech. But what the ethics training, what this block of Sila means for us really is this examination of this path that we're on. And you know, what do I want my spiritual practice to be? Right? Is this the right practice for me? How do I want to live? What do I want to bring into the world? How do I want to interact in the world? Is this a way that it will open my mind and my heart to be with all kinds of different people in acceptance and in loving kindness? And then what do I want to give? What do I want to give in this particular time and place? And how do I do that in an appropriate way? You know, the Mahayana that I teach, the Mahayana practice of or the Mahayana sect, if you will, or path in Buddhism, is really about the bodhisattva path, the path of those who choose to find enlightenment for themselves, for the benefit of others, to bring others to enlightenment. And you know, that includes the Tibetan Buddhist tradition and the Zen tradition, lots and lots of different course of study in Buddhism. But I liked it so much because it is really about helping other people and how we bring each other along in life. Yes? I mean, it, you know, we're so interconnected. And as we grow in our lives, others grow around us, right? We help each other. We talk about the things that are important to us, the things that we value with our loved ones. And we help one another in that way, in that conversation and in that sharing of ideas and understandings and sharing our dharmas, even when they're different. Yes? Even when it's a different dharma. It's okay because we're helping each other. Yes? So there's a teacher, Darlene Cohen, who wrote, if you wish to stop hurting people, it unfortunately entails renouncing a feeling that you enjoy and replacing it with your wish to stop doing harm. In other words, you have to see the emptiness of that feeling of pleasure and decide that the pleasure is not worth hurting someone for. That's easy to say, but it's really hard to do. We'd rather not bother with the annoying question of whether the feelings of others merit forsaking our own pleasure, right? And, you know, this was such a truth for me when I read it. I thought, yeah, that's it. You know, what the ethics teaching is about is refraining, right? It is about refraining, watching, thinking about what I say, thinking about what I do, and foregoing some of those things that I like to do, right? In order to not injure others, in order to not be harmful to others. So then when we come to this right speech, and we look at the things that the Buddha taught about right speech. So he had a very specific training in a sutra called the Vaka Sutra. In Pali, right speech is Sama Vaka, V-A-C-A. And he said, monks, a statement endowed with five factors is well spoken and is not ill spoken. It is blameless and unfaulted. Which five? It is spoken at the right time. It is spoken in truth. It is spoken affectionately. It is spoken beneficially and with a mind of goodwill. Right? So he just lays out these things. These are the things that you need to think about in your speech, right? And of course, it's all based on what our intention is, right? So the intention is the bottom line for everything, pretty much everything that we do. The intention sets the stage. A lot of times, we don't know what our intention is, right? We're not really connected with it. Or we're in denial about it. So it's really important that we think about our motivation for speaking as we speak, which is really difficult in casual conversation. And casual conversation is the time when it is really important, right? Because we're just talking away, and the next thing you know, we've said something, and now we've got a can of worms, right? And the thing is, you know, as they say, you can't unring the bell. You can make sincere amends, apologize for your words, but your words are spoken, right? That's why it's always a hard one for me, right? Just to remember that, oh yeah, I'm just going along having a conversation with somebody, and then I say something that I shouldn't have said, and I'm in trouble, and I've hurt someone's feelings, right? And it's so easy to do, to step on somebody's toes. Please, anybody jump in at any moment in time. Raise your hand, turn off your mute, I'll notice. If you have anything that you want to add or questions that you want to ask, please. So we always have to consider how our words are going to affect others, right? And they're not just spoken for ourselves. You know, we're in conversation. We are in conversation. And so, just one last thing in general about this. So when we talk about right speech, we are actually talking about today's right speech, right? When Buddha was alive, the teachings were spoken, right? It was essentially a spoken teaching. It wasn't written down, and it wasn't written down for hundreds of years. So now what we have is right communication or wise communication, and it includes everything, right? The way that we write, the way we speak, the texting and our emails, our telephone calls. It includes the things that we read, the things that we watch, the things that we listen to, right? All of that is wise communication. So, you know, discerning about what it is that we want to have come into our consciousness. So then these five, okay, should I move on to the five things? Or does anybody have anything to say? Yes, move on. Okay. So these five things. The first thing, it is spoken at the right time. This is called frivolous speech. And frivolous speech is the thing that we do a lot. It's our chatter. It's our chit-chat, right? And that's the other thing it's called, is idle chatter. And the thing about idle chatter is that it involves, often involves, several of the other pieces of this, right? Several of the other pieces of right speech that we oftentimes can run up against. So idle chatter can contain gossip, right? Contain gossip. Or lying in the form of exaggeration, right? But when we talk about frivolous speech, the Buddha said specifically he speaks at the right time, in accordance with facts, and with what is useful. So when we think about our conversation that we have just on a regular basis with one another, yeah? So what does that look like, and what are we doing, and why are we saying it? So what is the motive behind it? What is the intention as we begin to talk to one another? You know, certainly there are those things that we say to each other when we just meet. We say, hello, how are you? I'm a friend of so-and-so. Do you know them? What do you do for a living? Those kinds of things, right? So we just kind of check in. We kind of get a context for one another, right? And then we move on to other things, yes? And so in these conversations, as we move on, as we think about the things that we say, and we think about the questions we ask ourselves over and over, what is our intention? So, you know, the teaching is often that in our conversation, we would pause. We would pause just to check our motivation, just to check what it is I'm doing. Why am I saying this? Why am I asking this? And you know, you think about, that would be a pretty stilted conversation. On the other hand, it could be a conversation that would be more loving and discerning, or just more open, right? With greater awareness. So So not about being profound, you know. It's not about that we have to have profound conversations all the time, right? On the other hand, what it is about is kindness. Kindness and concern for one another, right? For ourselves and for the other person, yes, in our conversation. And kindness does not take a lot of time. It really does take mindfulness and awareness. So the suggestion is to not hurry and to not be judgmental, right? So to slow down in our conversation and allow people to say whatever they're going to say and to not judge what they're saying to you, right? And to hopefully... you know, the other thing is that that in the course of our frivolous speech or our idle chatter that we're doing with one another often, you know, in the course of that, we could indeed step on each other's toes. And so the guidance is to be able to say to someone, oh, my feelings are hurt. Right? My feelings are hurt, or that upset me. What you said upset me. Rather than, you know, making some kind of a remark about the person, but instead to talk about the words that they said or the words that they used and the impact that they had. So that then we're not attaching to the person's identity. Right? We are refraining, we are ourselves disengaging from creating a self of the other. Does that make sense? So what we are attempting to do is not create ourselves over and over again. To not build who we are to who we think we are, right? To not build ourselves over and over again. And so when we say to a person, you are thus and so, you are rude, let's say that, you're rude, right? We are saying that their personality, their being, their identity is rude, when indeed what it was a rude remark, right? Just a rude remark. Or we could say, did you mean to say that? What I heard was this. Was that what you meant? So that we could then clarify, and instead of going on. Yes. Instead of going on and on about it in our own minds. Thank you, William. So that relieves a whole lot, doesn't it? It relieves a whole lot of misunderstanding. If we have the courage, right? This is a really courageous path, right? So if we have the courage to say to someone, oh, that hurt my feelings, or did you mean to say that? Or was that, did I hear you correctly? Yes? So we can ask about it and then have a conversation. Yes, instead of just going on. Yes, Martha Rosenau.
So it's really a way of having connection with the person versus disengaging because your feelings got hurt by something that you said and keeping it to yourself.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Having greater intimacy with a person, actually. Yeah. Yes, thanks, Martha. So then, of course, you know, we go on to the next thing, which is to tell the truth. Yeah, we try to tell the truth to one another. And that also is very courageous, you know, to be able to say, that hurt my feelings, and the other person say whatever it is that they're thinking, right? To have an answer. And so then you have a dialogue about it. You know, you really just put yourself right out there and have a dialogue about what just happened. Yes, Amanda.
Because we're helping another family member. Mm. But the form of communication is very passive aggressive.
Mm.
And so sometimes it's not what they say, it's a tone that they say it in, or what they don't say.
Right.
And I have a difficult time being more linear and open and honest. I always kind of look for different approaches to how to maybe make that kind of disentangle that type of conversation.
Right. Well, you know, the important thing is that from your side, you're honest and loving.
Okay.
Yes? So you can be honest and loving. And that does open a can of worms often when you're honest and loving. Yes. So even if you say, oh, that hurt my feelings, or I'm confused by this, or am I understanding correctly, right? This is what I'm hearing. So, you know, people may say words, but they have a tone. And so the tone then makes their words completely different. And so you can reflect that back, that that's what you heard, and do it in an honest and loving way.
Okay.
Yeah. It seems like it's a real especially with our families. Oftentimes, it is a minefield, you know, to try and navigate all of those, you know, our histories are. You know, my daughters are in their late 40s. My oldest daughter will be 50 years old in 1 month. And, you know, our conversations are often fraught with, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, because this is a lot of baggage, isn't it? This is a lot of baggage. And so, you know, it's valuable that we ourselves kind of have an idea as we go into a conversation that our intention is that we will bring that love, that compassion into that conversation, and that that's where we will be on our side, right? My side will be loving and compassionate and with a desire to deepen communication rather than to further the rift, if you will. Yes. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yes. So then this whole idea of telling the truth is again, you know, it's really a profound kind of profoundly courageous thing that we commit to doing, right? So we say to our family, gee, I just don't understand what just happened then. You know, can we talk about that again? You know, because, you know, we aren't crazy when we feel that there's something wrong in our communication, right? We have mostly good intuition. And our hearts know what's happening when it's happening. And so, you know, what a wonderful thing to be able to start to communicate with each other in an open and honest way. So again, you know, we say what's appropriate, what's a benefit. We have a loving motive. Sometimes it's best not to speak. Sometimes we know we have to refrain. Right, especially if things are heated and what we're going to say is not going to do any good, so we allow things to settle. and then maybe at a later date or a later time, maybe 5 minutes later, we can engage in a conversation that is beneficial when people have settled. But oftentimes, you know, we can't, our silence is often the wisest thing we can do. Yes? So the Buddha talked about skillful speech. Yes, and when I think about behaving skillfully, that's really how this feels to me, is that we bring all of our skill, all of our wisdom into our conversation with one another, all our loving heart, our wise mind, into our communication with one another, and do the best we can. And you know what? Sometimes we really mess it up. I really mess up. And have to go back and make amends and make amends again. I had a good friend, a good sponsor years ago, who used to say to me, "Oh, well, you know, that's what you do." And, you know, you just have to make amends over and over and over again. And one of these days you'll stop. You'll stop and you'll think before you speak. Yes. So then the third piece of this is to avoid harsh or abusive language, to avoid speaking unkindly. We know what harsh and abusive speech is. We have all, you know, said it and probably, been harsh with people. And have had others be harsh with us, and it feels bad. It feels bad. And so that's really, those are kinds of those cues that we get. How does it feel when I say that? If it feels bad, I probably don't want to say it again, ever, right? So we can understand just from what happens in our own heart, right? And of course, this is the one I always talk about with Carol Cope, who's a longtime member of Rocky Mountain Insight and a Buddhist for 30 years plus before she died. And she and I used to have conversations, long conversations, about curse words and whether or not the F word was indeed harsh and abusive speech and if we should refrain. And we decided that we didn't have to refrain with each other, that as far as we were concerned, it's fine. But, again, this is your motivation. What do you think about when you're talking about a thing, when you're saying, the F word? My mother didn't like it. So I tried to refrain from saying it in front of my mother because, it felt like she felt disrespected. So, we had to be careful and think about that. So, that's the deal with our speech is, am I going to offend someone with my speech? Are they going to feel disrespected by me because I can't not use a specific word? So we think about that. Yes, so don't use harsh and abusive speech. Also, don't be a flatterer. So isn't it interesting that flattery comes into this in this specific place of harsh, abusive speech, is avoid flattery. Because, flattery is disingenuous. We're just saying something to get something. And so, what the Buddha said is that it brings out the worst in us and in others. Flattery. I always think that is interesting. Yes.
I'm the kind of person that is, I always compliment people. Is that like, how do you know when? Because I like to lift people up around me.
Right.
And so now I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like,
Well, you know, flattery is different than complimenting, right? So flattery is really about, it's about sucking up to people, essentially, right? It's saying things that you don't believe to be true in order to please people or to ingratiate yourself to them. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's different than telling someone, you know, pointing out someone's good qualities. You know? It's one of those things that that is not done often enough where we say to someone, you know, thank you for the way that you did that. It was you know, very kind. I appreciate it. Or I appreciate this about you, that you are helpful. And right? Those kinds of things, those kinds of compliments are true. But flattery is generally saying something to someone that we don't really believe and is not really, it's just really done to get into someone's good graces, hopefully that they like you.
Thanks, I feel better now.
I'm glad. I know you, Alicia. I know that you're not a flatterer. That you're kind. So isn't it interesting? So again, right? What is the difference between kindness and flattery? Right? When we can think about that and really choose, you know, how we speak to one another. You know, because I'm complimenting someone, am I flattering them? No, let's check that out. See what the difference is. Yes, Kim.
What I think about that is it's really a nice heartfelt communication to say thank you or I appreciate. It's really about the speaker actually telling you something that I appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes flattery feels like it's trying to pump up that person's ego.
Mm.
It's really like the direct opposite of a put down.
Yes.
So a put down trying to deflate that person's selfhood or ego. So yeah, it's a subtle difference, but it feels different.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. It does. Thank you. So then the Buddha said to use words that are helpful and not harmful. So again, you know, that can come right in there as we think about flattery, right? Or compliments, you know, pointing out someone's good qualities and you know, expressing appreciation for the good that they do versus running them down, right? Pointing out their weaknesses, pointing out their unskillfulness, the way that they do something, yes. And you know, people can be irritating, right? we get irritated by one another, yes. But that doesn't mean that then you know it's okay for us to say, you know, I hate the way you put the towel in there, right? I blah blah blah. Why don't you? Why can't you? And why haven't you? And, you know, those kinds of things, right? Where we're again running somebody down. So that is not helpful, right? That becomes really harmful when we begin to run each other down. Amanda, did you have something? Oh gosh. I think it's probably the most important speech there is.
And it has said, you know, generally it was along the lines of when you're stuck in a rut, a lot of, if you aren't being mindful, a lot of your communication can be so negative
mm-hmm.
with yourself. And after I had read that, I was like, oh man, yeah, what did I tell myself, you know, 5 minutes before, you know, into waking up?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, It truly is. I mean, you know, that our self-talk, the way that we communicate with ourselves over and over and over again, is the thing that really is the foundation of all our communication and all of our action. Right? Yeah. So, you know, if our thoughts are continually hateful thoughts towards ourselves, then we will walk out in the world. You know, we were talking about that earlier, about Pigpen with, you know, with the cloud over him. Is that Pigpen? And, you know, and there you are, you know, with this cloud over you all the time of hurt and anguish, you know, anguish. That's Stephen Batchelor calls, Stephen Batchelor calls, you know, what we call suffering, he calls it anguish. And I like that word, right? Because a lot of the time what we feel is anguish. Yes, that's what our suffering is. And that anguish comes mostly from inside of us. Yeah, the things we tell ourselves, about others, and about what others think of us, and about how we're doing out there, right? How am I doing out there? You know, and we've got a whole list of the ways in which we are falling short. Yes. So how do we do that? How do we find a gentle and loving tone even with ourselves, right? We're talking about tone, that tone of voice that we use with ourselves and the ways that we, you know, speak to ourselves in our own heads, moment after moment after moment. And, you know, how could we do that in a different way? How could we find a more loving way to speak to ourselves? You know, could all of our conversations with ourselves start out with, "Oh, sweetheart," right? "Oh, sweetheart, thank you. Thank you for getting up. Thank you for making such good coffee this morning," right? Wouldn't that be a great way to start the day with ourselves? "Honey, thank you for making such a good cup of coffee this morning. This is great. I love this." Or, "Geez, the coffee's bad. Maybe we should get a new bag of coffee." Right? Yes. It would be wonderful to be able to talk with ourselves like that. Yeah. To talk to ourselves as if we were talking to our loved one. Yeah. Yes, Martha. Martha G.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I just unmuted you.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're in charge of that.
I am. I can be.
I was looking for a button. Sometimes when I send myself an email from work to home email, I go, "Here you go, sweetheart."
That's great, Martha. That's great.
No, I can read it later on.
Yes. That's so sweet. I love it. Yes, don't use harsh words. Help. Be helpful. That's a helpful thing to do. That is helpful. So then the last thing, of course, is gossip. Don't gossip. Don't tell tales. You know, you know, gossip is very seductive. A lot of the time we think that that when we are, you know, even our, you know, Jack Kornfield, of course, this is the hardest one for me. Jack Kornfield says, you know, even no third party communication, which is essentially, don't talk about another person if they're not in the room. If they're in the room, you talk to them, and you ask them about themselves and what they're doing. This includes bragging about our children and grandchildren. This includes, those helpful conversations that we have when we talk to our families about, you know, how we should, you know, take care of the other person, you know, another person in the family, and what they should do, and blah, blah, blah. It even includes when we're talking about whether or not we should do an intervention and put that person in rehab, right? I mean, it's very, very difficult to have third-party conversations and remain loving and kind, right? Because oftentimes we're talking about things that hurt us, or we're talking about how great they are. You know, one of the things that that was a real revelation to me as a mother was, you know, when I was first going to 12-step meetings, and we would be talking about our children, etc., and my children were pretty young then. And a woman came up to me at one point in time, several years later, and said to me, you know, I wish you wouldn't talk about your children. I don't have children. I've always wanted to have children, and this is very painful for me. And, you know, I was so surprised by that and felt so bad that I had never considered, you know. And of course, you know, my conversation was, what's wrong with you? How come you never thought about these other people's feelings? You know, you're not the only woman in the room. But, you know, sometimes our third party conversation is painful for others, right? And so, it just is another way, another piece of mindfulness, another piece of asking ourselves, why am I going to talk about this? Why am I going to say this? Will what I say hurt another person? And just to be aware, just to be mindful that that people are fragile. Yes? And just as fragile as I am, so is the other person. And to try to keep that in mind as much as possible in our speech.
So, Paula?
Yes, Tori.
A thought that I had for earlier is, what we're talking about, is obviously the importance of what we think.
Yes.
Is critical, because we're not going to speak until we've thought something.
Yes.
So, the practice of trying to right thoughts is an interesting one to do, and incredibly difficult, because I think I'm betting everyone that's on this Zoom meeting can think of many times when they've thought of things and were really good, and we congratulate ourselves that we didn't actually say those things. That's, you know, that's point for us.
Yes.
You can get kind of lost in that, wouldn't it be great if I just say such and such.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually something I thought of earlier today, because now that we've gone to the next level of releasing some people, I'm noticing all kinds of infractions, you know?
Yeah.
And so all kinds of things that I think about, this is what I should do. I should write something down to hand to these people that aren't wearing masks. And, you know, and I can get going on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just thinking about the importance of practicing not only what we speak, but even what we think.
Yes.
Try to
that. Yes. 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 It's important that, you know, I mean, it's really easy to have hateful thoughts, unkind thoughts. It's very easy. They just arise. I mean, you know, they just arise out of the ether a lot of the time, you know, and pardon me?
They're so righteous.
Yes. 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 Yeah. And that all of those righteous thoughts, they build us up. You know, our ego loves it. You know, we become, you know, then we become the right person. We are the right person. They're the wrong people. We're doing it right. They're doing it wrong over and over again. And the ego loves that. You know, we have a greater and greater our personality becomes more and more fixed, right? Our identity becomes more and more fixed the more right we are. Yes, does that make sense? Yeah. Martha R. has her hand up.
I was just going to say it solidifies why we made sacrifices. So if other people didn't make the same sacrifices, then the person might question, why was I doing all that? And so it's all about either building yourself up or solidifying your ego, I should say.
Yes. Thanks, Martha. Yes, Joan.
Paula, could you speak to right speech and making amends? I have a critical edge sometimes that I'm fairly unconscious of that slips out. To make amends, but I want to do it skillfully. And I know to use I messages and my accept my responsibility and not be judgmental, but I really am not very good at it. You know, I say I'm sorry and I make sure not to qualify it. I'm sorry if I hurt you is one of the famous things that probably we've all heard.
Just, right.
It doesn't apply. So anyway, I wonder what your thoughts are about amends and right speech.
Well, you know, when we apologize to people, really, that heartfelt apology is, you know, I'm sorry that I hurt you. I'm sorry that I, you know, period. I'm sorry that I hurt you, and I hope that you can forgive me. But, you know, our apology is really about recognizing and acknowledging our own misstep. Yes, we don't have to, you know, there's not this, we don't beat ourselves or anything like that, but we acknowledge what we have done and you know, like you said, not but and not if, right? I'm sorry but, and I'm sorry if I did and blah, 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 because the only reason that we're apologizing is because we know what we have done. If we don't know what we've done, then there's no reason to apologize. But it's really important that that we examine what we do, you know, what we have done, if we know that we've hurt someone, and that we make an amends for that is heartfelt, and then try to do the right thing after that. Yes, because amends is we change the way we behave. Yeah, that's what that's about. And so we don't want to go back and, you know, keep doing the same thing over and over again. Yes. Eve, you
that
have...
pausing.
I'm sorry?
That pausing.
Yes, that...
Before speaking and catching myself, not just what I say, and how I say it, and if I'm irritated or angry, do not say anything. I need to make an amend to someone who I just found out is no longer living. And I wanted to ask you about that too, because it's very frustrating and sad. It's very sad to realize that I put off and this dear person to me died in sleep.
You lost your opportunity. But it's not lost, you know, we're still all connected. And so, you know, the our ability to, you know, do our a loving kindness practice, a Tonglen practice, and include them in your meditation in that way is very meaningful. But, you know, if you want, we could talk about that, because I do have some experience with those things. And I'd love to be able to talk with you. Maybe we'll have a phone call, huh?
That would be very helpful.
Great. You bet. Thank you. Eve, you had your hand up? You're still muted. There you go.
I have been reminded tonight throughout this teaching about the four agreements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the first one is to be impeccable in our work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Be impeccable in everything we say. But so that's one thing. And that takes effort.
Yes.
I think it takes effort. It isn't something that just comes naturally to all of us, you know? I mean, but the second thing was, when, I don't know who was sharing, but, you know, one of the things I have stopped doing is that I used to make myself pay over and over mm-hmm. and over again for a mistake that I made way back, and I would just, oh my God, you know, I owe, no matter how many times I had said, I'm sorry, it was like I somehow felt like I had to pay for the rest of my life.
Right.
For something I had done 20 years ago.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, I'm happy to report that I've stopped that.
Yeah.
And I've also stopped making other people pay mm-hmm. over and over and over again. It's like, it's just so insidious.
Yes,
it really is. It really is.
Yeah.
So there is a little growth. There are some habits I do now. I was so happy to report that.
It's great. Thanks, Eve.
I'm reporting progress.
Yes. Yes, and you know, it's all practice. Right? It's all practice. It's like and we, you know, and we're all progressing. We're all progressing, right? And practicing all at the same time together. Yes? Sandy, did you have something?
I had a thought. In my experience, conversations and communication can be very complicated and happen just kind of organically, and things pop out and you don't even necessarily know that you've made a mistake.
Yes.
But oftentimes we can feel the tension,
mm-hmm.
or we wonder later, did I see that in their face? Is there something there?
Mm-hmm.
And I think looking at motivation is so important, as you originally pointed out. What was really going on for me as I was expressing myself? But also, getting caught up in apologizing over and over can kind of make it about me.
Yes.
Rather than really opening it to learn from it. And I wonder if to simply move into the conversation by saying, you know, I felt like there was a tension there. I wonder if I may have said something. Could we talk about it?
Mm-hmm.
I think that is such a healthy way to get into transparency and openness.
Yes.
I can't practice it all the time, but I have a feeling that it would be wonderful if I could.
I have a feeling that you're right. I completely agree with that. Yes. Yes. So often we just move on. Right? We just move on and then don't go back and say, oh, you know, I felt like there was something there. Can we talk about it? And then have it be open and just, you know, now it's not a big deal. Right? I mean, that thing in a marriage where you say to each other, let's have a talk, right? The minute you say, let's talk, you know that there's something up and it's going to be awful, right? So, yes. So if we could remember to do that in our conversation, it's wonderful. Yes. Thank you.
It feels very vulnerable.
It is. Yes.
It takes a lot of courage.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, that's the thing that we really are working with all the time, is this vulnerability, right? That open-heartedness to be able to say, okay, I'm going to do this, and then we'll see what happens, right? Just to have the open heart and the courage to be vulnerable. Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
What if you just said, did things just get weird?
Yeah.
Is it just me? Or did things get really weird?
Perfect. I mean, that's wonderful. All that stuff. Right? Instead of just pretending that it didn't get weird. Instead of pretending it didn't happen. Yeah. With anybody and everybody. Just being able to say, oh, wait. Yeah. And then go from there. You know, I mean, what a great thing that would be for all of us to be able to do that with each other. Yeah. Thank you all very much for this evening. This has been great. I've appreciated your comments. And next week we're going to, or I think Thursday we're going to talk about deep listening. So, you know, speech and listening go hand in hand. So we're going to talk next about listening, deep listening. All right. So let's dedicate the merit, and then we'll meditate for a few minutes. Does anybody have anything else they need to say before we close? Are we complete?
Just one thing.
Yes. Yes.
I just want to thank everyone for Donna's contributions. We have still an ongoing Sangha, even though we're meeting by Zoom. So your support is greatly appreciated. Whatever feels comfortable, whatever you can afford, to support Paulette and to keep the Sangha going. Thank you.
Thank you, too. Thank you, Gail.
Hi, Beth. Just on a different note.
Yes.
With that, how do we make contributions?
You could do it through either PayPal or Venmo.
Okay.
Yep. And with my email address, paulettem27